Welcome to Hashtime with Navguzi Chiwanuka. This is a place where we help you unravel social constructs, discuss self-development in line with mental health, emotional well-being, and everything in between that directly or indirectly affects us in the millennial world around us. If you're hearing my voice for the first time and are the kind of person who is not scared of being a better version of yourself, even if it requires you to contradict who you were 24 hours ago, consider this your virtual home. I'm your host, Navguzi Chiwanuka, and I cannot wait to engage with you in the various conversations. This Wednesday, our guest is Marcy Geno Apache. She is a journalist by profession and a poet by passion. From this episode, poetry for Geno made it easier for her to set her emotions in motion right from childhood to date. Marcy is one of the people who held on to their dream for over a decade, only for societal standards to snatch it from them. In this conversation, she and I went over how and why her journey to pursue her love for journalism came to a still. If anything resonates with you during our conversation, please share with us on social media with the hashtag HTNKInSession. Here's our episode. Marcy Geno Apache.
That's me.
Welcome to Hashtag with Navguzi Chiwanuka.
Finally.
For someone who is hearing your voice for the first time, or even the name, who are you?
Well, in short, what part do you want to know? The fact that I'm a Libra or the fact that I love beer?
Do people understand those things?
Those things are for Americans. Libra, Cancer, what? You know that stuff where we are white on the inside. Some of us feel American on the inside. But yeah, I am a spoken word artist. I am by PayPal. I am a journalist. I haven't been practicing in a while. I also try to do some communications here and there. And yeah, so I'm a writer, really. That's in short who I am. Yeah. I'm also very mood swingy.
Stop there. But is that all before you stop?
Well, professionally, I mean, if I'm selling myself through your podcast.
Sell yourself. Podcast. Prestigious.
Aye. Yes. Yeah, I used to be a radio presenter as well. That was back in my... In my senior six vacation, where I wanted to be a news anchor, mm-hmm. by all means, no matter what. Mm-hmm. And then reality hit and we realized that they want, you know, wide-hipped news anchors. But yes, I still want to be
a news
anchor. Now I'm fat, ish. But back then,
they weren't there.
Yeah, there were no things.
But on radio, they're not seen.
And I wanted to be a TV news anchor. I wanted to... Because my dad used to watch a lot of BBC and CNN, and those were my things as well.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, you just sit there and read news. I thought that was all there is until I went to like journalism school, and there's like so much more, and I didn't like field reporting. It's just hectic. So yes, journalism, long story short, it didn't work. I went to work at Daily Monitor as a writer. That means I can write. I'm a writer. And then yes, communications. Oh, and I sing in the bathroom.
And TikTok.
And post it to TikTok. That's the only accepting platform.
We shall accept you on Facebook, my dear. We shall not ban you.
Right.
Is it journalism that you wanted to do growing up?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Up until your senior six vacation, you didn't ever consider anything else.
Nothing else. It was journalism. I used to mimic a specific news anchor. She was on CNN. She was called Aisha Sese. I used to mimic every after dinner. That was entertainment for the family. Marcy, now come. It's your news time. So like that was like from primary three. I just wanted to be a news anchor, like no matter what. And I actually made it on my mom's phone as a ringtone, you know, mimicking that Aisha Sese thing. So she gave up. She wanted me to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
She was like, no, this one can't be. So she got me space at a local radio station, and I became the youngest news anchor, the youngest journalist, and I also had a show. But I feel like those vibes have gone. If you put me on a show right now, I still need like a month of practice or something.
Right.
Yeah.
What happened? What died out?
So before I went to campus, I was a very privileged kid. I can't say I was from a rich family, but where we were, that was in Kitgum district. Man, we had things. We had like a bungalow amongst so many huts. You know, I was born at a time when my parents were a bit better financially. So I was privileged. I was protected from the world. I didn't know hustle. As in, I had everything. Because I also wasn't exposed. I didn't know smartphones or whatever. I was just happy. There was food 3 times a day. My toys. I was the only kid at home. I literally had everything. So I was so protected. No relationships till like senior six. And I went to the best schools. And I was a popular kid, I'd like to say. So I didn't know anything really about the world. Because I also didn't watch much TV. I didn't know about discrimination or body discrimination until I went to campus and I had a crush on this guy. But no, okay, the story is, so media challenge. I had this thing going on at universities. I think they still have it up to now. You know, universities compete in the inter-universities media challenge. We basically produce a news bulletin. There's a female anchor, the male anchor, the news reporters, and it gives you the feel of you're actually in a newsroom. And so I joined campus to do journalism. I got accepted to do journalism. And joining campus, that was so interesting. I'm like, wow, I'm going to audition to anchor. And I did audition to anchor, and there was a panel of judges. The only bad thing was those panel of judges were from within us, like either third years or second years, as long as they've gone through the Media Challenge Initiative. And so when I auditioned, it was amazing. Guys were like, yeah, man, she's going to get the part. I mean, yeah. She already did it in her vacation. So I knew I was going to get the part. And then somehow I didn't get the part. They gave me a news reporter instead, not a female anchor. Then from the corridors I heard it was because I was too dark and finding lighting would be hard for me. And also I was too skinny. I didn't make the, what is it, a proverbial? I didn't make the news anchor that they wanted, you know, a Flavia to see me, that kind of look.
Right.
So yes, that was when I first came in touch with reality. And the lady that was actually put to anchor was dark as well, only that she was, you know, a bit wider hipped, and she also slept with one of the judges. And then I didn't know that we could do that.
Wow.
Because the judge slept with us, one of my crushes.
See where you're headed.
I know, right? But yeah, so that was my first reality with life, and it really depressed me for a long time. It did, because now I started being so judgy on myself. I started noticing the things that were wrong with me. I started realizing why we were bullied in primary school and we were called coin, the LRA rebel.
Wow.
Yeah, because if you're from the north and you have this like dark look, this tiny legs and this tough face, we naturally have tough faces. That's for sure. Yeah, we were called coin. And so everything came into place. Like, I started noticing, I'm like, is that why I received like only one love letter out high school? Is that why? Like, is it because I'm also like tomboyish? Like, is that a problem? You know, so I started wearing things that were baggy to cover the fact that I didn't have hips or whatever. I started getting lost. That was the point. I started getting lost.
Right.
Yeah. And so when I went into the real world, I was doing well. I was actually put on the top 20 journalist students to look out for in some magazine. And that was supposed to uplift me. Every opportunity that was there, we were the first 20 to be given that opportunity. It was sort of a fellowship. And every time I got an opportunity to audition, either a radio audio audition or a TV audition, I just, those things came up in my head and I flunked the auditions because of that. Like, you'd go to NTV to audition and in your head you're like, really? NTV, you want to be an anchor? Have you seen yourself, Mercy?
Yeah.
Come on. And I'd hate everybody, as long as you're pretty and in your TV and you're not a northerner. And I'm like, yeah, she probably got it because she's pretty and she's not from the north. Like, I just had so much hatred for the world. And that was when I started doing poetry, because I wanted to speak out. I wanted to console people as well as myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mostly for me. It was to heal me, I think.
Right.
But it started getting noticed, and I started getting gigs, and it started getting being paid for. But at the same time, it also made me somehow a better person. But still, up to now, it's kind of hard for me to try and go back to the journalism world. I want to anchor. I don't want to go and report news. I want to present. Every time I try auditioning, there's something wrong. Either my voice is childish or, you know.
Your voice is childish.
That's what they say. Oh, that was at Radio 1.
Is it like now, or that was far back?
Yeah, it was just like, what, 2019, 2020, not far back, really. That was when I got
back. I beg. Someone said we sound the same.
Ah, who's saying?
Oh, get out.
So you have a childish voice.
Exactly. I'm just getting to know.
Man. Everyone found a problem with me somewhere, somehow. Either you're not too funny or you're not...
Even too funny? Where is the fun in anchoring the news?
No, that was when I was now trying radio presentation, auditioning. Like everything I tried with journalism for me was not working. And where they put me, like in writing, that was not what I wanted. So it became depressing. I wanted to always quit those spaces. And in doing that, I also injured a lot of my opportunities because the opportunities were there, but it's not what I wanted. And it got annoying and frustrating and I would just quit. And I feel like most of the journalism opportunities out there are for younger people, fresh people out of university. The older you grow, the less this show presenting opportunities are, unless you started from like way back in the day. And even when I honestly tried modeling, I was I'm black, tall. Let me go and model.
These are the qualities they're looking for.
You know, they told me that I am fat. I mean, Nabuguzi, you've seen me. I tower over people. They told me I'm fat and short.
Ah.
Yeah. Nothing was working.
Short.
Yes. I went also to act.
I actually want to get closer to you and stand. I'm sure you're taller than I am.
Yes, I'm sure. Way taller than you.
Oh, don't say way. Way. When you say way, when you say way, I feel like a jerrican, my dear.
Oh, wow.
Respect my name.
Oh, wow. All right, we are sorry. Let's use wine bottles at least, not jerry cans.
You can hold a wine bottle. You can't hold them in your hand.
Yeah.
So you went as far as acting as well?
Yes, I was like, man, I wanted entertainment. I'm all about light stuff. I don't like serious things. They depress me.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to do acting. I'm like, let me go and try acting now. And I went for the role. You know, they were looking for a tall, dark person with natural hair.
Mm-hmm. You have that.
This is me.
Right.
This is me. Let me go to this one. I went, I did my auditions. And at some point, the lady got so frustrated in there. She said, first of all, you're not even so pretty. So if you cannot act, then what are you doing here? I was like, yeah, that was it. That was the point. I decided that Geno Masi, you're not a very good looking person. Entertainment and the arts is not for you. But spoken word... accepts everybody.
Had you done spoken word by that time?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Where did that come from?
The spoken word?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because earlier you had talked about how you wanted to express yourself and feel seen and heard and for other people to also feel the same.
That's the answer.
How far back was this? When did you realize this?
That was around 2017, 2018. It got serious in 2018. 2017 was basically starting phase and doing gigs for free and platform, da da da. Then 2018, I realized that people actually snap and laugh and applaud when I perform and it makes sense. And I get some messages on Facebook of people saying, you inspire me, you are talking to me.
Right.
And that sort of gave me a sense of purpose
mm-hmm.
life. Of course, up to now, my parents do not know what happened. My parents keep thinking I just don't have the opportunities, but I do.
Right.
But it's because I don't feel good enough for those spaces like journalism. I remember the point my mom was so bitter as well. But you're my girl. You're a very beautiful girl. Why do people tell you these things?
Oh, you told her. Yes, you opened up to her.
I told her. Only
did you believe her though? And when she told you that you're beautiful?
I didn't believe her.
Yeah?
I didn't.
What did you feel like? Like, yeah, you're my mother. What can you say?
Exactly. That's how we always... Even when my friends compliment and be like, oh, but man, today you look good.
I'm not your friend.
Guys.
I'm not your friend. Have you looked at yourself in the mirror?
Gee, no. Women do this. Women, we just compliment. Have you been on Facebook and seen those comments on terrible photos? Wow, beautiful.
Hey, but me, I don't do that. When you're beautiful, you are. Like, when I... I don't know if I should call it a weakness, because someone was once offended. I had just joined the school, and there was this girl I was seeing constantly. She was in a class below. And I was like, this girl is beautiful. And I don't know how to keep quiet. Mm-hmm. So I was walking down the dormitory area with a classmate, and I had to stop this girl. I was like, hey, you are beautiful. Wow. She was like, thank you. But the person that I was walking hand in hand with was offended. She was like, don't ever do that again.
Why?
She was angry. And I was like, I was confused, because I was like, what's wrong with that? Mm-hmm. But she just said, don't ever do that again. Okay. I was like, okay, I didn't get the memo of the school.
Yeah.
But whoa.
Mm-hmm. I can understand, because I'm very uncomfortable with compliments. I don't like being noticed. Okay, so here's the thing. I do know for a fact that my butt is bigger than the rest of my body, which should be an advantage for a woman. But I hate it, because people tend to just focus on that. Like, it's not my fault if I take a photo and it's out there. It's just a part of my body. I did not pose for it to be your point of focus. I literally hate body compliments, because then I go back to the mirror and spend a lot of time there looking at myself and trying to challenge what the people in my university did, or the people in life have done or have told me. And it didn't make sense. So, and it's hard to get people out of that thinking.
There's a time in 2017, I don't remember what exactly had happened, and I was talking to a friend. I was like, I'm very uncomfortable with these things. And then for him, he imagined that is a point of strength as a woman. That is something that it should be. Because I think he was like, wow, you enjoy it. I was like, no, I want to be seen as a human being. Yeah. I want to be talked to. I don't want to be talking to someone and know that they're focusing on are probably my thighs or my butt, especially if I'm not even relating with you at all. Like, that is extremely weird.
And they don't find it weird. I don't know why.
They feel like it's a compliment. That's what he told me. He was like, wow, it's a compliment. I was like, oh, what? And then you start second guessing yourself. I was like, am I normal? Mm-hmm. Because every other person wants this.
Yeah.
Why is it that I don't want it?
And then guys have this question of, but what do women want? We compliment, they don't want. We don't compliment, they get mad.
It's not all of us.
Yeah,
you can't box us all in one thing.
Well, yeah, it's true. I prefer gifts, not compliments.
Yeah. I am very sorry for calling you beautiful.
Send me a beautiful gift. Thank you.
Define beautiful.
Beautiful gift?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
what falls in the category beautiful?
Can send me a hammock.
What is a hammock?
You know, those things you just lie on, and they're like,
my dear, you have trees, eh?
I don't, but the balcony, you can attach it to the door and the balcony, and
white person inside you. Mm-hmm. At least we have the hints. Mm-hmm. You belong to Echo Minds, poet, and I think you forgot to mention.
Mm-hmm.
So your first.
You literally have all the answers to your questions for me. So you know me.
Not so much. Yeah. How did it come to birthing?
To Echo Minds, happening. Well, so I was doing poetry at first with a group named Inkliners. But I also wanted a Kampala platform. Inkliners was in Gulu most of the time.
Right.
And I felt that sometimes Gulu does not have everything that you want, including audience-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw a call. I think Carol, the head of Echo Minds, made a call. But then we didn't have a name. So when she inboxed me and she said, could you be a part of Echo Minds? I was like, cool. So we had a meeting, and then we sat down and started forming all those ideas of what the name should be, what the logo could be. We basically used all the resources that each of us had individually to create the group.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a group of 8 to 9 female poets.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first in the country. But people think we only work with females. We also work with guys. I mean, because what is to spread the word without male engagement? So we do, but they're not part of the group.
Right.
Yeah.
That is more like them being on the technical team.
Not even technical, but you know, sometimes you need a guy's perspective.
Right, 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 right. To create a balance or just for just?
Yes. That. But not too much of it.
Mm-hmm. And then for the period that you have been in the space of poetry and have been a spoken word artist, what are some of the misconceptions you get from society?
Well, for starters, it's a very unserious art.
Unserious.
That's what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
What are you really doing? What is poetry? First of all, we are in a... we are in a time when people still think poetry is... I mean, what school did to us wasn't nice.
Mm-hmm.
We were taught, mommy, 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 AIDS, 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 what have you done to us? And it's like a childish rhyme.
Right.
And people still think that is what poetry is. And then people also tend to think that, oh, well, my IQ is on what level? They keep thinking I am too smart. So if they're having a conversation with me, they have that expectancy of, man, this girl is a poet. She is smart.
Oh.
So there's so much pressure to be smart. And honestly, I just write from experience. It's not like I like the... I used to like reading. Not anymore. I feel like reading and being in the know also depresses me so much. So I just know what I know. What I've been through, a ride on a Buddha in the morning and what the Buddha told me, that is what I know.
Right.
Yeah. And that is what I write about. Then people also expect you to automatically be a feminist as a female poet. Because most of us, I don't know why we're like
But
that.
What is feminism?
What is feminism? Exactly.
People,
exactly.
There are very many wrong ways people look at feminism. I mean... You're having a conversation with someone, not even a conversation. Let me flat out call it a debate.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about something and then he goes like, I'm positive you're a feminist. Dude! Okay, I might be, but I didn't even tell you that.
Exactly. No, people no longer expect women to have any smart contributions to conversations. The moment you're smart and have something to say or you defy their opinion, man, she's a feminist. Like, come on, it's just an opinion. Yes, I'm a woman. I love good things for women. And all genders love good things for themselves.
Right.
I mean, that's the fact. As a man, you want the best for men. As a woman, I want the best for women. So, man. Still on the definitions of feminism, really, I'm just someone that wants humanity. I just want what's best for everyone. So I wouldn't put myself in one package of feminism. As long as the world is not right, as long as what people are doing is not right, that is what my poetry is about, because so many people wronged me, so many people wrong me, and I get mad and I see other people getting wronged and I get depressed. Literally a day in my life walking down a street is depressing.
Right.
Mm.
How do you handle that?
I spend a lot of time indoors, honestly.
Or to protect yourself from getting depressed?
Mm.
That's
deep. My therapist called it the Messiah effect.
Oh.
You just want to be there for everybody, for everyone, but you can't, and it also depresses you that you can't. But also the smallest things depress you.
Looking at you going away from the things that you wanted to do, journalism being the biggest part. Or from the especially for the area of journalism that you wanted to go for. How are you handling that now that you're out of that space? What did it take away from you when you were walking away?
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I know I'm overusing it, yes, but it's kind of depressing. I also feel lost a bit because that is all I really wanted to do and that is all I knew. And every time I try to do something new, I don't have the same excitement. I just want to present, to MC, to read a news bulletin, and that's the end. But I also don't want to do it anymore because I also get bored really fast. I know that I have been there, done that, achieved something small out of it, and I want to move on. And so ever since journalism, I've just kind of been jumping from like one space to the next, trying to find what I really like after journalism. And there's not much.
there's not much that you have found?
There's not much. I find life one big boring space. Like I'm usually bored, very bored, very
told me, and I was like, huh, what?
Honestly, even when I travel, let's say go to some new place, you're there chilling, blue waters, and you're like, but then what? But then after this, then what? I'm usually on that constant, then what?
Oh, then what?
Yeah, then what? I no longer find anything exciting.
Have you been able to be present in the moment and be like, this is really good and I'm going to enjoy it? Have there been moments you experienced that kind of thing? Like, I am here.
Yeah.
And I am going to enjoy it.
Yes.
How long does it take?
Usually around the bar. Yeah. Which is also a toxic thing. Everything literally is toxic. But also usually when I'm finally helping out or, you know, making sense somewhere and guys are appreciating, and that's poetry. That's why I'm stuck there. When I have made a point, when someone has gotten something out of it, when I have helped someone there, I feel like I have done something, but it's not often.
So it's a thing about service that fulfills your sense of purpose.
Yes.
And you're still looking for the best way you can serve.
You have a way with words.
Get out.
Yeah, I struggle putting my words together, by the way.
But you've been doing so great. Writer. That is also putting words together.
Yeah, but like physically or out loud, terrible. I grasp here and there for what to say.
And then you perform. Again, I'm here saying, yet you perform. You're great. You're really perfect with words. So what is that moment in your life that you felt like, do I survive this?
Because before this podcast started, I told you I have this terrible memory issue. Mm-hmm. I cannot really find that one specific moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I am only, which is dark, and I mean, but I have to say it because I have to answer your question.
Right.
But I think the only reason I'm still trying to live is the hectic empathy that I carry for the people that try to see that I am okay. They're putting in so much. They have put in so much. The people that have sacrificed so much, and I cannot just disappoint them. And also the fact that I'm a coward. I'm a big coward. I can't kill myself, honestly. However much I pray for death, I can't kill myself because I'm a coward. I fear pain. I fear, like, what else is out there? And then the question, then what? So I have died. Then what?
Well, I have. You're also bored by the idea.
You know? You're I have so rested, funny. But then what? You get? But then it's mostly empathy that still keeps me here. And that is, you know, parents. Strictly parents. Nobody else.
Right.
Yeah.
And are there some ways that you have managed to come up with helping yourself, especially for self-care? What defines self-care on your part?
Well, therapy is amongst them, but again and again, I still feel like it really doesn't help. It's like talking to you right now. I am telling you my issues, and after this, I'll feel better for like an hour and then go back to my same depression.
Mm-hmm.
I like to, I'm a life. People keep saying Geno is vibes.
But you are.
Yeah, so that is also what I do. I like to go out. I like to meet new people. I get bored easily, so honestly, it's hard also for me to maintain relationships, especially with friends. Like, after we have talked about everything, then what? Like, okay, then we're just meeting, especially those who don't share my bar vibes or don't go to the bar or whatever. Then what? Like, what are we doing?
Well,
as
at
friends?
Least we maintained. Am I your friend, by the way?
I don't know. Sometimes we're friends, sometimes we're not. I don't know. I really don't know. And I also find you intimidating.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What did I do?
That's so cool. Like, I'm like, what am I going to tell this chick? I'm not smart.
Let me tell you what you said the day we met.
Uh-huh.
So we had been chatting inbox, that is Facebook. And then when we met, we're like, okay, I thought we didn't have anything to talk about.
That's what
because,
I said.
Because we've talked about everything. And I think that that goes as far as your then what?
Mm-hmm.
And then here we are. How is it like more than a year?
Yeah, it's been a year.
More than actually. Because I think the first time we met might have been 2020.
That was before the whole COVID thing. So yes, around 2020 or actually end of 2019, social media.
Is it? 2019. That is far.
Social media. Yeah. End of as we, but 2020.
Might have been 2020.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I also have that issue. People are so cool out there. People know movies from like the director to all the actresses and stuff. People know things. People, I meet people and they have so many terms. You've, man, someone was gaslighting me. And I'm like, well, I'm in the presence of awesomeness. I'm like, what do I
gaslighting.
You know?
Is gaslighting a presence of awesomeness?
Yeah, like, where did you find this? How did you know this? Because people are constantly researching. I am not. I like to be where I am. And that is also my biggest toxic traits.
Right.
If I probably researched, I would know what I wanted to do next. But I'm comfortable. I'm afraid of what
else? Are you afraid of?
My biggest anxiety, obviously, is, you know, failure. Everyone's, I think, but let me not speak for everyone. That's it. That's my biggest anxiety.
Failure.
And also with, like, usually the what next thing. It happens with relationships, with work, with, I get bored. I want to move on to the next thing, like, really, really fast. And I also have a big mouth. I don't shut up. I learned not to shut up. I learned to speak exactly my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that also gets me into a lot of trouble. I keep losing people. Because people don't like facts. Also keep losing people because people want you to be forever humble as an intern, as an assistant, as a starting person at a workplace. I don't. So I also lose out. Yeah, but my biggest, again, another anxiety is, of course, the death. Okay, not death itself, the process to the death. Is it by accident? Is it by a snake bite?
Wow, you keep thinking about it.
Thinking about those things. And I also keep thinking about the death of the people I get close to before it happens. Like, if they die, what am I going to do with myself? So I distance myself from so many people. Because if I get close to you, even one day, even 2 days, that's why breakups of like 4 days really hurt me to like the max. Because I knew... Every time I see a death post on Facebook, and I didn't even know the person, I go to their Facebook feed.
Right.
They were laughing, they were happy, and that already makes me so sad for them. So the people that I interact with, most of them will not understand why I distance myself, but it's because I'm afraid they're going to die.
Yeah. You're also going to die one time.
Yeah, that's...
And we're here for you.
Come on.
If you ever ghost... Mercy, again, if you ever ghost me because you're afraid that I'm going to die, I'm going to haunt you in my death.
And I ghost you for other reasons. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. That's not ghosting. Is that ghosting?
No. Until I find it. What if I find it after like 6 months? Then I'm like,
come on. Before. When had we last spoken? It happened.
Yeah, it does.
I think we really have this idea that friendships are kept by constant chatting. But it's bigger than that. We communicate. The comfort that I come with when I'm talking to you. I mean, when I'm talking to Marcy Geno, myself, Nabuguzi, I'm not going to feel like I have to pretend to be something else.
Yeah,
that's the biggest thing. If you can see me and you can hear me, that is the biggest thing for me.
Aren't you? I mean, I also have this toxic trait where I'm really jealous about my friends and what they do without me. But I also don't want to be there. But I want you to at least let me know that you're going, we are going here. Do you want to come? And I'm like,
no. And then you said no.
You know? But at least let me know. But I'm jealous when my friends make new friends. And then I'm also not communicating. And yet, like, it's just a struggle out here. So I end up, like, just cutting off people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't take it. I can't take the fact that you're happy out there without me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is this something that you've shared with your therapist?
Yeah, I have.
Do you follow what they should tell you to do? Either you've laughed.
Like I said, I feel like therapists, anyway, sometimes they don't really help. She literally said it back to me. Yeah, you're very jealous and it's toxic. You need to calm down a bit. Give your friend some space. Of course, I need to give my friend some space. I know that, but I can't. Like, my trait, it just can't. So the best thing I did for a while was to actually disappear, because the more you're online, the more you're following, the more you're seeing people. And I quit social media for like a whole 2 months. And in that whole 2 months, nobody actually checked in. And so I also cut out people after that. Like,
What are the chances that they're also struggling?
Yeah, they're also struggling. But man, 2 months is long.
Oh, wow!
So then she said, mm-hmm. I'm probably a narcissist. I'm always thinking about just me.
The therapist?
I'm probably thinking about just me. And that was the time I felt that therapy was becoming so burdensome. It felt like a chore. Like, you remember, I get bored easily. So it felt like a chore, honestly. And I ghosted my therapist. Yeah. Until the next.
Like, she just threw it to you like that?
Yeah, maybe she's right. Maybe she's not. But she also got me overthinking. Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Like, I'm thinking about it, I'm like,
huh. What would she have said? What else? She told me give them space. I'm like, but it's my trait.
Right. But I'll give them space how?
Like, let them.
You know, because we're different. We're tuned differently. And what might work for me might not really work for you. So there is a way how life is tailored according to our personalities.
True.
And giving space really means differently for every other person.
Yeah. I mean, she said your friends also have lives. Remember that. It's not like you guys were born together or you're going to die together.
Do you accept that?
I don't. I just want perfect. For me, my only problem is communication, man. Just let me know. That's all. Don't shock me.
Don't shock me.
And I've lost people to bad communication. Even people that say, "Yo, I'm coming to your show. I will come to your show."
Mm-hmm.
And show their riches and they don't show. No communication. It's not the show that I want you to
Oh, no communicate. That's big. Yeah. That is big because that presents you as a liar.
So me, it hurts me. I just want perfect communication.
Perfect communication. That's quite, hey, perfect communication without imperfections.
Yes.
Perfect communication might be hard.
It's hard. That is hard.
When you add perfect to something, it becomes, I think, a little bit harder.
Because I am the type that tells my friends, yo, this week my moods are in, my demons are in, and I'm not available. Please don't contact me for the next 2 weeks. I will just be rude. And forget it. Man, this week, mercy. I'm the type that will also correct you from the start. If you just text me hi and nothing else, I'll tell you that is not the way it should be. That is not how I like it. It irritates me. I want you to do it like this, like this. If you get offended, that's up to you. But you get it. That's what I want. So it's also up to you to let me know what you want. So that's...
Oh, you find a balance? Yeah, you meet in the middle. Makes sense.
Yeah,
that's perfect.
That's perfect. That's fair enough.
That's good enough. That's not scary. That's not scary.
Yeah. What did you think?
That version of perfect is not scary. But we're not communicators.
But we're learners.
We're not communicators. It's a whole struggle. Somebody's going to send you hi from April to August, and then they're going to ask you, "I am a human being. Why are you ignoring me?" Like. Okay, I'm also a human being. Can you respect my time?
So self-care is when I get into my narcissistic space.
Oh, really?
It's all about me. I don't care what people want. This week, I am off. This week, I am taking myself to the bar, my happy place. This week, I am doing... not even manicure, but this week I'm going to the spa or travel, or that for me is self-care. Something that gets me into my zone, my space. I'm not thinking about anybody. I'm not reading anything new. I'm not adding on to any knowledge that I have. I am just in that zone with myself, with my music, and, you know, re-energizing. Usually after I quit a toxic environment or job, I take a while before applying to another place. I want to find out what went wrong. What is it that I want? Is it what I really want? And things like that before I apply to the next place. And in that space, people are usually sending me applications. I mean, job adverts and all that. And they think I'm just not getting the place, but I'm just not applying. Things like that. Yeah, so self-care to me is quitting without a care as well. So many other things to self-care in my narcissistic.
You're insisting on that. For someone who is listening in, what was the very first time you heard about the word mental health? And what did it communicate to you?
Ah, that's tough. First time is tough. But you know, when we were growing up, when people were watching like Ben 10 or what, people had DSTV.
Ben 10 was there?
I don't know. Let me just say, when guys were watching those
Second Dexter.
Okay, Dexter. For us, we were growing up in a place where, you know, we're watching, of course, tapes, you know, video tapes and all that. And my father's favorite pastime was news, radio news. And if we ever had access to TV, it was to watch news still.
Wow.
But the only cartoon that I grew up watching, that was before I came to visit my cousins in Kampala, was it was called Sarah. It was something, a government made cartoon.
Yes.
About all those SRH things women go through.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, somehow, there was something about mental health, though it wasn't very clear. It had something about, you know, communicate always, like how parents should talk to their, you know, things like that. And I also read a lot as a child, big books, novels, grown-up people novels. I don't know where I used to get them, but I remember I used to write poetry from like way back, from primary three. So for me, mental health came down to one thing, communication.
Yeah.
When I was a child. So I really hated it when we were bottling things inside. And so I started writing from back then. And now growing up, I realized that mental health is like so much, so much. Yeah. I don't have one specific answer.
Mm-hmm.
But with your guidance, we can get there.
What are some of the ridiculous things that you've heard about mental health? Based on your knowledge?
White people thing. So white people thing. Or it's a very dramatic thing. You people are just dramatic. Mm-hmm. And the worst, you're lazy. You're just lazy. You just don't want to face reality and things like that. I remember there was a time I was so depressed. And then I would just come back home after work where I didn't want to work. And just come back home and lie in my room, and that's my space. I just want to be in my space. I just want to listen to music. I just want to like relax. I've been out there. I have been seeing people. It's so much work to talk to people, to be humble, to dress the way they want you to dress. Goodness. And then I come back home and my brother was angry. You're always indoors. You're always sleeping. I'm not always sleeping. I'm just lying down in my head, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're always sleeping. You're so lazy. You need to work hard so that you get a maid in future, because with this kind of laziness,
wow.
Like, how do I start explaining that you cannot just wake up from depression? I mean, you can be sad and no longer sad. That's okay. That's sadness. Mm-hmm. You can wake up from sadness. An ice cream thing can light up your day. Depression is just weird. You cannot even pick up your computer to try and apply to something better. And yet you know you have to do it. The fact is you know you have to do it.
That
even
part.
Therapy becomes annoying because they're telling you what you have to do and you know it. But there's just something wrong. You just can't. Like, why? Your body's just useless. Just there. You just want to be.
Yeah.
So when they say you're too dramatic, especially with my mood swings, you're too dramatic. With your communication needs, you're too dramatic. Like, it's a white people thing. You're too white. No wonder you're poet. Even poetry.
Ooh, going as far as that.
Yeah, like, what is so white about those things? Anyway, yeah, but those are some of the ridiculous things we really have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And the most ridiculous one is people saying things like, but you know, if you just plan your life... Then you will not be complaining about depression.
Oh, wow. So your life is disorganized right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. What words do you want the listener to walk away with?
Man, just do what makes you happy. And sometimes I know we don't have that choice. We don't have that choice because we have children to take care of. But if you have to quit a toxic environment, quit. If you have to lose a few friends... Friends in quotes, because if they're making your life hard, then they're not friends. Just quit them. If you're doing things that are not in your comfortable space, and if the things that you're doing are making people unhappy with you, but you're happy, like me going to the bar, for example, Man, just do it. Just do it. I feel like we are all in this box of how life should be and how we should appear. For example, when you're getting married, it's like as if marriage is an automatic cure to your past life. You're no longer supposed to go to the bar. You're no longer supposed to drink. People expect you to automatically know how to cook the moment you get married. Like, do what makes you happy. And stop thinking that people are... I mean, people owe you. People don't owe you. People don't owe you a smile. People don't owe you to get better. So in the end, however depressing it is, it's you to get you out of your depression. I read a very weird quote once. It said, depression ends when it ends you.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. But
some people come out of it with therapy.
Mm-hmm.
With the right therapist. I have to emphasize that.
It can still be hard. The people that fail to pull out of it.
Yeah. That is true.
But in the end, it's just, you know, you. But no one owes you, you know, like a job placement or happiness at a workplace. You just have to create those things that make you happy in your different environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For anyone that wants to get in contact with you, how do they reach out to you?
So, I'm mostly a Facebook person. I'm that old. Facebook, I'm Mercy Geno Apache. Geno, G-E-N-O, and then Apache. Apache literally has no meaning. It was given to me by my nanny because she couldn't pronounce Mercy. Yeah. So, but I am told it exists in some tribes. Yeah. But Mercy Geno Apache, Facebook, Twitter. I still haven't figured out how that thing works. And I'm supposed to be all bougie and stuff.
Right.
But yes, still Geno Apache, Instagram, Geno Apache, and I can't obviously give you my number. It might be for all the wrong reasons you will use it for.
I understand.
My takeaway from this episode is that quitting toxic environments is a form of self-care. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of #MinogwizichuanuK. If you love what you heard, make sure you subscribe to #MinogwizichuanuK on your podcast platform of choice and share it with your friends, loved ones, and everyone that you believe is affected by the millennial world around us. Also, feel free to share your insights about what connected with you on social media and be sure to tag us on Facebook. We are at #MinogwizichuanuK and on Twitter, our handle is at @HGNKPodcast. If you are in search of mental health professional help, do not hesitate to reach out on my email, nabguzi@nabguzichuanuka.com. I would be glad to pair you with people that are ready to help you. See you on the last Wednesday of this month, and until then, quit toxic environments.